Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. This week, we hear about an effort to preserve traditional European Jewish culture from the end of World War II.
But first, we learn about the film industry in Nigeria. Nigerian filmmakers are fighting illegal copying and sale of movies on DVDs throughout Nigeria.
This reduces the amount of money they can make from their work. Income from a business is called revenue, and a budget is a plan on how to use money for a project. You will hear both of these words in the upcoming story.
One of the problems the story talks about is piracy. Piracy is the illegal sale or use of someone else's work. And digital simply means the use of computer technology. Now, Bob Doty brings us the story.
120 knots. 130 knots.
That audio is from a 2012 movie from director Obi Amolonya. It is called Last Flight to Abuja. The film tells the true story of a plane crash. Nigerian funny man Ayo Makun made the movie 30 Days in Atlanta. It earned more money than any other Nigerian film.
Obviously, I come like that, I come tell us saying they work for oil and gas for you.
So now, kerosene attendant you be.
I don't call this to come brazo.
Who is you? Just say that your wife be that.
The film tells the story of a month-long visit to the United States by a Nigerian man and a member of his family. American professors and movie industry workers recently met for 2 weeks with 30 Nigerian film producers at the UCLA Film School. Among the Nollywood movie makers was Fidelis Duker. He wanted to learn how to better advertise his movies. He says the Nigerian film industry is very big.
If an industry that employs close to 1 million people, either directly or indirectly, and has close to about $500 million in revenue annually.
The movie industry could have earned even more if not for sales of film piracy. Illegally produced copies of movies are sold in many markets. The Nigerian government has promised to stop such sales. Nigeria produces more than 1,000 films each year. Most are made quickly on low-cost digital equipment. The films usually cost tens of thousands of dollars to make. That is a small budget for a feature film. Major Hollywood movies can cost $200 million or more. Many movies produced in Nigeria are not shown in movie theaters. They are made into DVDs and sold to people directly. At the UCLA Film School, Nollywood producers learned about both the art and business of movie making. Hollywood actress Diane Ladd told them, cooperation is more important than competition in movie making.
When we in the arts work together, we're promoting culture. And remember, if a civilization loses its culture, you lose the civilization.
I'm Bob Doty.
Thanks, Bob. I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to As It Is.
Don't go away. We'll be right back after a short break.
Welcome back to As It Is. 70 years have passed since World War II ended. By the year 1948, many refugees from the war had left Europe for the United States. That summer, American Ben Stonehill made tape recordings of Jews who had survived German death camps.
Now, that cultural history is available to people around the world through the internet. Marcia James has the story.
That is 17-year-old Marcia Leon in a recording made in 1948. It is one of over 1,000 songs gathered from World War II refugees who had moved to the United States. Ben Stonehill was an immigrant himself and a Jew. By trade, he was a carpet installer, covering the floors of homes and offices. But he also had a strong interest in preserving Yiddish culture. Miriam Isaacs is a language expert specializing in Yiddish. She explains that after the Holocaust destroyed the heart of Yiddish culture, very little was left.
There was an awareness that Jews had an important culture and that these cultural treasures were in danger of being lost, and that these survivors were the last authentic carriers of this Eastern European Jewish culture. And so he took it upon himself to do this recording.
Nearly every weekend during the summer of 1948, Ben Stonehill went to work. He carried borrowed recording equipment on the train from his home in Queens to the hotel in Manhattan. Once he got there, he asked each person to sing whatever song they felt like singing. A short time ago, we heard Marcia Leon singing Tuk 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 into Stonehill's recorder as a teenager. Nearly 70 years later, she had plenty of memories of her visits to the Hotel Marseille in 1948. She had immigrated to New York in 1946 and would come to the hotel from her home nearby to meet boys.
I remember the lobby, it was full of people. You had older people sitting on suitcases toward the back. There was a balcony with refugees coming in and out that I really paid very little attention to, but the action, the younger people were all in the lobby. It kind of hummed, you know, it was like an orchestra of people kind of melding and working together.
The huge project of examining the 39 hours of recordings and organizing the songs fell to Miriam Isaacs. She has spent the past 3 years on this process.
Because it's only almost entirely just an oral archive, I often don't know who's doing the singing. We know very little about the singers. Occasionally we have their names and where they come from, but very often not.
As of now, Miriam Isaacs has written down the words for 66 of the songs. They are now listed on the Center for Traditional Music and Dance website. The site also includes the original recording. I'm Marcia James.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words in Their Stories. On today's show, we look at a few words as they relate to a famous story in American history, the Lewis and Clark Expedition. In 1803, the United States purchased a large part of North America from France. The area was called the Louisiana Territory. After the deal was made, President Thomas Jefferson proposed a fact-finding trip, or expedition, to the Louisiana Territory. He chose Meriwether Lewis to lead the expedition team. Lewis, in turn, asked a friend, William Clark, to join the team in its trip across what is now the northwestern part of the U.S. mainland. There are many things that must be done to organize a complex activity like an expedition. These things are called logistics. The word logistics has military roots. It comes from a late 19th century French word, logistique, meaning sheltering and supplying troops. Now let's consider two words that sound almost alike. They are complement, spelled with the letter I, and complement, spelled with an E. To learn more about both words, we turn to Kelly Jean Kelly. She went on her own expedition, of sorts, to find out more about Lewis and Clark.
Anybody who's ever traveled knows how important logistics are. You have to make your plane reservations if you're flying. You have to make your hotel reservations. You have to figure out how far you're going every day. You have to figure out how to get where you need to go on time and what you need to bring and what you need to have. I am very bad at logistics. It is not my strength.
It's not your strong suit.
It is not my strong suit. But fortunately, I have an absolutely wonderful travel partner. One of our other colleagues here in Learning English is named Roger Hsu. And Roger is the videographer and the producer of the history videos. And he's very good at telling a story with pictures. I usually think about telling a story with words, but Roger uses images to tell a story. So that is one of his great strengths. Luckily for me, his other great strength is logistics. So he made sure that we were always where we needed to be at the right time with the right equipment. And that was incredibly, incredibly valuable. I'm very thankful for Roger.
So it was important that you two were together as a team and someone was able to pick up the slack, meaning to do perhaps what the other person doesn't do very well.
Correct, correct. And this is one of the things that historians talk about with Lewis and Clark, is that those two men had what they call complementary skills. So complementary spelled with an E and not with an I. A compliment is when you say something nice about somebody. So Roger is a very nice man and a good travel partner. So that's a compliment. But he and I are complementary in that we have different skills, but they go together very well. Some historians say that Lewis was very good at logistics. He organized everything before the trip and he bought the supplies that they needed and he made arrangements with the government to get the money and have everything organized. And William Clark, his partner, was very good with the people on the ground. He organized the other soldiers and the other people on the expedition and he helped make friendly relationships with the people that they met. So Lewis and Clark were an excellent team because they had complementary skills.
Thanks, Kelly. And that's Words in Their Stories from VOA Learning English. I'm Anna Mateo. Are you good with logistics? Let us know in the comments section. There you can also practice between compliment and complement. And don't forget to check out our website for more episodes of Words and Their Stories.
I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we begin the first of two reports about singer Marian Anderson.
Along that wide river, river old Jim, wide river, there's one more river to cross.
A tall black woman is singing in a concert hall. Her eyes are closed. She is not looking at the crowd of people sitting silently before her, but she feels their presence. She tries to make the music touch their minds and hearts. Her deep, powerful voice reaches out to all parts of the concert hall. She finishes, and there is a long silence. Then the people clap and cheer. They call out for another song, and they call out her name, Marian Anderson.
Marian Anderson was an American, but she found success in Europe before finding it in her own country. She was born in 1897 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She grew up surrounded by poverty, yet she remembered her family as a happy one. The Andersons were deeply religious and involved in their church. It was in church where Marian first began to sing in public. She was 6 years old. The songs she sang were spirituals, the religious songs that African Americans sang as slaves. The songs are about suffering and the hope of a better life after death.
Marian's interest in music grew as she got older. When she was 8, her father brought home an old piano. She never thought she would be able to play it. One day, however, she heard piano music coming from an open window. She looked inside the house. There she saw a woman, playing ever so beautifully. Her skin was dark, like Marian's. She knew then that if another black woman could play the piano, so could she. The Andersons were too poor to pay someone to teach Marian, so she was able to teach herself only a few simple songs. Her voice remained her most important musical instrument.
Marian's father died when she was 10 years old. She had to go to work to help support her family. She continued to sing at church on Sunday. Soon, other churches heard of the young girl with the beautiful, deep voice. They invited her to sing for them. Marian accepted. She began singing in African-American churches all over Philadelphia.
At about this time, several people told Marian that she should have a voice teacher. They told her that a beautiful voice can be destroyed if it is not trained. Marian said she always sang naturally, without any thought of how she did it. She realized that she would need some training. The people in Marian's church were very proud of her. They wanted to help, even though many of them were as poor as the Anderson family. They collected enough money to pay for a few voice lessons. She went to a local music school in Philadelphia.
A group of girls was waiting to enter the school. Before Marian could enter, however, a young white woman who worked in the school told her to go away. "We do not take black people here," she said. Marian was shocked. Never before had anyone insulted her because of her race. Years later, she remembered her feelings.
"I just looked at the woman. I was shocked that such words could come from someone so young. I did not understand how a person surrounded by the joy of music could not have some of its sense and beauty inside her. It was as if a cold and horrible hand had touched me. I had never heard such brutal words. My skin was different, but not my feelings.
Marian Anderson was to hear those hateful words many times again during her life.
Behold that star, behold that star up yonder, behold that star, it is the star of Bethlehem.
Marian Anderson continued to sing at churches and special gatherings. Her singing became more widely known. But she still felt that her voice needed training. Finally, a friend promised to help her meet a well-known voice teacher. The teacher was Giuseppe Borghetti. Only the best singers in Philadelphia were his students. Marian went to see Mr. Borghetti. She was nervous because she wanted to please him. He told her that he already had too many students. He made it clear that he would listen only because he knew her friend. Marian's nervousness disappeared when she began to sing. The song she chose was one she knew best. It was called Deep River.
Mr. Borghetti sat quietly when Marian finished. There were tears in his eyes. Finally, he said, "You will start training at once. I will need just 2 years with you. After that, you will be able to go anywhere and sing for anybody." Marian Anderson was very happy. Her friends agreed to help pay for her lessons. Mr. Borghetti taught her how to control and direct her voice. He also taught her how to breathe correctly. Marian learned to sing classical music, the songs of the great European composers.
Marian Anderson grew to love opera because it joined singing and acting. But Mr. Borghetti advised her not to choose opera as a way to make a living. He knew that black singers in America were not permitted to sing with white opera groups. Instead, he told her she could be successful by singing in concert theaters. She followed his advice. In 1924, Anderson sang in New York City for the first time. In those days, a singer had to be recognized in New York to be successful everywhere else. She sang in one of the most important concert theaters in the city, Town Hall. She sang some spirituals and some classical music. She wanted to make sure she would be judged as a singer who happened to be black, not as a black singer.
Marian Anderson's Town Hall concert was not successful. Few people came to listen. The next day, newspapers sharply criticized her. They said she sang the European music without feeling or understanding. Anderson was crushed. She decided to return to Philadelphia. She thought about never singing again.
I gotta roll, you gotta roll, all God's children gotta roll. When I get to heaven, gonna put on my robe, I'm gonna shout all over God's heaven. Heaven, heaven. Everybody talking about heaven and going to heaven. Heaven, I'm gonna shout all. Shoes, you got shoes, all God's children got shoes. When I get to heaven, gonna put on my shoes and gonna walk all over God's heaven. Heaven, heaven. Everybody talking about heaven and going to heaven. Heaven, gonna shout all over God's heaven.
This program was written by Shelley Gollust. It was produced by LaJuan Davis. Our studio engineer was Bill Barber. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English. We continue the story of Marian Anderson and how she went on to gain great success as a singer.
Gonna shout.